Good morning and welcome to the 2020 Results Conference Call and webcast for VGI Partners Limited. With me in the room is Ian Cameron, our CFO, David Jones, who is an Executive Director of VGI Partners, Adam Philippe, our Chief Operating Officer, and Tom Davies, a partner and senior member of the investment team. We also have Robert Poyner, who is a partner and manages our New York office, and he is dialing in from New York. Now, the purpose of today's call is to take your questions on the full year result that was lodged with the ASX this morning. But before we go to questions, I would like to highlight some key points from our slide presentation, and Ian Cameron will run through the detail of the financial result. Turning to page two, 2020 was a year of two very different halves for VGI Partners. At the start of the year, our firm was well placed going into the COVID pandemic, and our funds even generated positive returns in March. However, as we've discussed before, we were too conservatively positioned when markets rebounded in the second quarter, and our shorts and US dollar exposure were material headwinds. As a result, our funds under management fell by 7% to $2.9 billion. VGI also incurred unrealized losses on its investments in our two listed funds, VG1 and VG8, and VGI's dividend was constrained. But I'm pleased to say that the second half of the year was much better, and we'll go into more detail on that in a minute. As a result, our funds under management rebounded to $3.1 billion to be broadly steady for the year. Our funds under management has also risen further in recent weeks due to investment performance and is currently around $3.3 billion. I will now turn to our income statement. Total operating revenue for the year was $64 million. This was mainly driven by management fees of $43 million and performance fees of $21 million. Normalised operating costs were $19 million, which was down 8% on the prior corresponding period. This led to normalised EBITDA of $45 million and normalised net profits of $30.7 million. Statutory NPAT was $25.9 million. And the difference is due to the impact of amortization plus fair value moves in our VG1 and VG8 investments. So overall, our financial results were a little down on FY19, and the main driver was lower performance fees. However, we're pleased to confirm that all our funds are now above their respective high watermarks, so we should be well placed if we generate performance in line with our objectives from here on in. The final point on this slide is that VGI's board has declared a fully franked final dividend of 28 cents per share, which is payable on the 11th of March. Now, this was a 94% payout ratio of normalised NPAT for the second half. And this is relatively high given the strong growth in performance fees in the half. However, the board felt comfortable declaring this payout given our dividend was constrained in the first half due to limited franking credits. And our balance sheet is in a strong position. So, to put this in context, if we combine the 28 cent dividend with our first half dividend, our payout ratio for the full year is 75% of normalised profit. Now, turning to page three. As I mentioned a moment ago, the second half of 2020 was much better for the business than the first half. As you can see here, VG1, our listed global fund, generated a 14% return for the 6 months, net of fees and tax. And VG8, which is our Asian listed fund, was up 10%. We also took the opportunity in the middle of last year to enhance our investment processes. This hopefully puts us in a strong position for generating further positive returns, as well as navigating the volatility that is likely to continue this year and in the years ahead. Pleasingly, we've had strong idea generation during this period, adding a number of new investment positions across the global and Asian portfolios, particularly in the second half of 2020. And there have been further additions in the first 2 months of 2021. Many of these situations have already been key contributors to our recent returns, so the team is happy that the hard work is paying off and is very motivated to find even more opportunities in the years ahead. Turning to the final point on this slide, we've also hired some new executives for our investment team and our operations team. These executives are complementary to our existing teams, and so it's been fantastic to have them join and bring their insights, energy, and expertise to VGI Partners. Turning to page five, 2021 is off to a good start, with our total funds under management rising to $3.3 billion as of last Friday. The returns for our key funds are also shown on this page. And as you can see here, year to date, we're up around 4 to 7% across the board. And so far, it has been a positive start to the year. Now, moving to the next section, we've included a couple of slides that describe our business and our strong focus on alignment of interests. In particular, as we note on page A, our board, staff, and their families have well over $150 million invested in our funds and also in over 77% of VGI Partners itself. We are therefore closely aligned with both the investors in our funds and the external shareholders in VGI Partners itself. Now turning to page nine, we include this slide because it shows the track record of the VGI Partners Master Fund, which is our longest established core fund. The portfolio has delivered compound annual returns of 13.5% since it was established in January 2009. This performance is within our target range of 10 to 15% per annum over the long term, and that is net of fees. The 10 to 15% return target was what we put in place when we started that fund in January 2009, and it remains our target to this day. It is also important to note that we achieved these returns with an average net exposure of 70%. And this means we've delivered returns that are superior to the market while holding a very substantial cash buffer. So this track record continues to be very powerful when we talk to investors and advisors. Now at this point, I'd like to hand over to our CFO, Ian Cameron.
Thanks, Rob. Now turning to the financials on page 11. I would like to start by explaining a couple of normalisation adjustments to the firm's profits. These normalisations are similar to those that we described in our half-year result in August. Firstly, we have added back the amortisation costs of the IPOs of our two listed investment companies, VG1 and VG8. This adjustment affects the management fee line and was $5 million in 2020. This amortisation exists because VGI Partners, as the investment manager, pays for the offer costs of both IPOs, as well as issuing free alignment shares in VGI to participants in the VG8 IPO. The combined amount of these costs appears on the balance sheet under what we call contract assets. At its peak, this asset was around $50 million and is expected to amortise down to zero over roughly 10 years. By the end of 2020, these contract assets had fallen to $44 million. A second normalisation on this page is that we have added back unrealised fair value losses of $0.3 million pre-tax to the other income line. This relates to the mark-to-market impact of VGI's holdings in VG1 and VG8 shares. But the pleasing news is that we actually had an unrealised gain of $5.4 million in the second half. So this substantially reversed the unrealised loss in the first half. The final normalization that we've made to the table on page 11 is one that does not affect profits, but is a reclassification between lines on the income statement. The background here is that VGI Partners pays for most of the operating costs of its funds. In 2020, VGI paid for $2.1 million of fund operating costs. Under current accounting standards, we are required to net these for management fees in our statutory accounts. However, in this table, we have reversed this treatment and instead included this amount in normalised operating costs. All normalisation adjustments were tax affected at 30%, except for the cost of issuing VGI Partners alignment shares. This item is not tax deductible and so is not tax affected. It is also important to note that our normalisations in 2020 were all non-cash items. I won't spend any time on it, but for reference, page 12 shows the reconciliation between our normalised and statutory earnings in more detail. The next couple of slides provide more information on our revenues. Turning to page 13, the chart shows that funds under management grew strongly from the firm's inception to 2019. In recent years, this growth has been assisted by positive investment performance and the launch of our two listed funds, VG1 and VG8. 2020 was a more challenging year, as Rob described earlier, but we were pleased to finish the year broadly steady after the headwinds of the first half, and FUM has risen to be $3.3 billion recently. It is also worth remembering that all of our funds are closed to net new investment. Turning to page 14, management fees in 2020 were materially higher than prior periods. This was partly due to higher average funds under management, including a full year's contribution from VG8, compared to only 2 months of VG8 revenues in 2019, given its IPO late in the year. The other key driver of higher management fees was that our VG1 fee waiver ended in April 2019. In other words, VGI Partners has been receiving management fees from VG1 since that date. In addition to management fees, we also earn performance fees of 15% across all of our funds, subject to high watermarks. While performance fees in the first half were negligible, the strong rebound of our funds in the second half led to performance fees of $21 million. As Rob noted earlier, as at the start of this week, all of our funds are above their respective high watermarks. Now turning to page 15, which provides more detail on expenses. Normalised operating costs, excluding depreciation and amortisation, were $19.2 million. This amount was down 8% on 2019 due to a combination of careful management of expenses and lower staff bonuses. Normalised costs were $2.1 million higher than statutory because, as I mentioned earlier, the accounting rules require us to deduct the operating costs of VGI's funds from revenues, but we have reclassified them as costs in our normalised earnings. I should also flag that the Charitable Foundation contribution represents the donations of fees earned from the Charitable Foundation class of the Master Fund, so there is zero net impact on profits. Rob will talk more about our charitable initiatives later. Now, turning to page 16 for the balance sheet. We finished the period with $42 million in cash and no debt. This was an increase of around $12 million in the year. The increase reflects free cash flow of $28 million, partly offset by dividend payments of $10 million, and the purchase of VG1 and VG8 shares on market for $6 million. On this last point, our holdings in VG1 and VG8 appear on the balance sheet under financial assets. You can see that these were valued at $34 million at 31 December. The increase in value in 2020 mainly reflects the $6 million shares purchased during the year, offset by a small reduction in the share prices. Regarding the contract assets of $44 million, I discussed these earlier, but as a reminder, these represent the cost of VG1 and VG8 IPOs and will be amortized over the life of the VG1 and VG8 investment management agreements. Turning to the dividend, the board has declared a final dividend of 28 cents per share. This is fully franked at 30% and will be paid to all shareholders who are on the register at the record date of 2 March. The payment date is the 11th of March. The dividend translates to 94% of normalised profits for the second half, which, as Rob said earlier, is relatively high given the strong growth in performance fees in the half. If we combine this with the dividend from the first half, the payout was 75% for the full year. So despite the challenging conditions of 2020, we have continued to pay dividends and kept our balance sheet in a very strong position, which gives us flexibility for any opportunity that may arise in future. I will now pass you back to Robert Luciano to discuss page 17.
Thank you, Ian. Now, I'm pleased to say that VGI Partners supports a number of charities, and VGI has made in excess of $7 million of charitable contributions since its formation in 2008, including $1.2 million in 2020 alone. These amounts include cash donations and fee rebates for funds that we manage for select charities and foundations. We also formed the VGI Partners Foundation in late 2018 and established a new charitable foundation class in our VGI Partners Master Fund. 100% of management and performance fees earned by VGI on the charitable foundation class are donated to the VGI Partners Foundation into perpetuity. This has resulted in $1 million of donations to date. More importantly, the charitable foundation class has roughly $26 million of funds under management at the end of 2020, and this equates to approximately $400,000 of fee donations per annum, purely for management fees. Now, turning to page 18, on this slide, we've summarised our shareholder engagement program. As you can see, there are a number of events happening during the year, including our annual general meeting in May. Last year, we had to hold this in a virtual format due to COVID, which was obviously disappointing given it was VGI's inaugural AGM, and I was looking forward to meeting many of you in person. In terms of this year's AGM, we're carefully monitoring the COVID situation, and we will announce details closer to the date. I would also encourage you to visit our website. Here you can find our investor letters, briefings, and other materials. You can also subscribe for our email communications on the Contact Us page if you are not currently on our distribution list. And if you have any questions about your holding or VGI Partners itself, please feel free to contact our investor relations team. Now that brings us to the end of the presentation, and we'll move to questions. Operator, we'll start by taking questions that have been submitted over the webcast before we go to the phones. And I've asked Tom Davies to read out questions from the webcast. Tom, over to you.
Thanks, Rob. We've had a number of questions which have been emailed in advance or have come over the webcast. So we'll try to get through as many as we can. If we don't cover your question, our investor relations team will follow up with you. So first question is, what will the dividend payout ratio be going forward?
Okay, all right, thanks. Well, the dividend payout ratio we've discussed is 50 to 75%. It was highlighted in previous presentations, and we keep getting the questions, so we have put in the slide pack on slide 21, Appendix A, we've reiterated what the dividend policy is as per the prospectus. I'd say the only change that has been made is that we are applying 50 to 75% of normalised profit, which is obviously a higher number and includes add backs. If it was of reported profit, it would be a substantially lower dividend, given the non-cash charges. So 50 to 75% of normalised profit is the range. However, as we state at the time of the prospectus, it depends on the level of performance fees. In a year of substantial performance and high performance fees, the payout ratio may actually be lower than 50 to 75%, particularly if we find opportunities for that capital, whether it be new strategies, new proprietary investment opportunities, or other situations that the board deems appropriate. So there is a degree of flexibility, which I'd highlight, but the key focus and, you know, part of the philosophy is key, and we should reiterate, is to have a, firstly, a sustainable dividend. I think that's very key, but then a growing dividend. So, you know, we obviously want to see a sustainable dividend, a growing dividend, and then one that's fully franked. And I'd say that philosophy is exactly the same philosophy that we apply to our listed investment companies. You can see that with VG1. We started to pay a dividend when we knew we could start paying one that would be sustainable and could grow over time. And in turn, that philosophy will apply to VG8. So it's a, you know, overarching philosophy of the group. So hopefully that helps explain it.
No, that's good. Got a question here which probably relates to that, which is, what is your franking credit balance?
Oh, look. Ian, can I hand that one to you?
Of course, no problem. Thanks, Rob. So VGI's franking credit balance is 9.8 million at the end of 2020. And that's noted in one of the notes to the financial report. After we pay the final dividend of 28 cents per share in mid-March, this will drop to around 1.4 million or around 2 cents per share. As VGI's turnover exceeded 50 million in 2020, VGI's tax rate was 30% last year. So assuming there are no changes to the tax rules, any VGI dividends paid in 2021 will be franked at a 30% tax rate. Now, in terms of franking, you use the tax rate payable in the previous year. So for 2022, we obviously don't know what VGI's turnover or tax rate is going to be, but the outcome is highly dependent on performance fees. But what I'll say is, if VGI's turnover remains above 50 million in 2021, then the tax rate will remain at 30%.
Okay, got it. Thanks, Ian. Next question here is, why the big increase in trade and other receivables in 2020? I think might be, again, that might be for Ian.
Sure. Thanks, Tom. The majority of the trade receivable relates to performance fees that crystallised at 31 December that we were due to receive in January, and we have now received those.
Got it. How do you think about VGI's buying of VG1 and VG8 shares, especially given VG1 has an active buyback?
Okay, I'll take that one. Well, look, we've got policies and protocols in place. We've taken a view that VGI only buys when various programs are not in place. So, for instance, the DRP, the performance reinvestment program, and then obviously the buyback itself. The buyback has operated on certain parameters. Those parameters, based on various questions via, you know, advisors, planners, various other shareholders, we've looked to make clear clearer in the release today, which shows when the buyback will be active.
and the parameters. And that's on page 23. So I think that that's probably a reasonable explanation of how the buyback is managed. But in terms of VGI buying, VGI will be active when those other programs are not in operation. The DRP is just recently finished, and I think we lodged this morning performance reinvestment program will be.
Hi everyone, I think we just cut out there, so I'm going to re-ask the question, which was, costs were relatively well controlled in 2020. How do you think about the cost base from here?
Thanks, Tom. So normalised operating costs were about $19.2 million, as I mentioned earlier, and that's down about 8%. We went through a process of careful cost and cash flow management last year, saving money in areas of IT, travel, and research subscriptions. Obviously, I'm not in a position to give guidance, but I would say some of those costs are sustainable due to the contract negotiations in areas like IT. Other areas like travel, that may change in the medium term once COVID is hopefully under control.
Got it. Next question here is, have you had any redemptions?
I'll hand that to Adam.
Yeah, no, look, only immaterial redemption requests in the second half of 2020, and that's the same for the upcoming redemption date at the end of next month.
Okay. So
no, nothing material.
Next question here on the webcast is, is there any admittance that the investment in Crown Resorts through the fund was a mistake, and what is the rationale to continue to hold?
Okay. I'm not sure we've talked about Crown in our VG8 investor presentation. It's disclosed that it's one of the larger investments for our Asian listed investment fund, our Asian fund, VG8. It's not in the global fund or strategy. We have made an attractive return on that investment so far. We were able to buy into Crown as we also bought into Star during the pandemic. It has appreciated since then. We were able to buy some more during regulatory concerns last year, and the price has appreciated since then. We've highlighted our rationale and our disclosures, and we don't comment on active positions in terms of what we're doing. But the share price has appreciated since the concerns had peaked, and We've clearly articulated we think it's a high quality situation, and it's attractively priced. So what previous management teams have done or previous people have done at the corporation, we don't have a comment on. We'll let others talk about that. We're valuing the asset. We're valuing the incumbency of the group, and its premises that it has in three key major cities of Australia. I don't know, I think that's...
Yep.
If you want to add anything else, I don't know, Rob Pointer, Rob's on the line, I don't know, but I feel like that sort of covers it. But.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think, we weren't particularly surprised by the news flow. It's obviously got a lot of press attention recently. A lot of headline attention, but we weren't particularly surprised by what came out. We think it's a high-quality asset that is asset-backed and has a lot of optionality. As Rob said, we've got our entry price is below the current share price even after the news overnight, so we continue to see it as an attractive situation.
All right. Okay. What's next?
Next question is, do you need to invest any further into the research and distribution teams to scale the existing strategies from here? aside from closing the NTA discounts at the LIX, do you have additional plans for your distribution platform? Over what time frame should success be measured here?
Okay, well, it's, there's a lot of questions in one. So do we need to invest further in our research and distribution teams? Well, we have made additional hires in research, as we've highlighted, and in the operations team. So we're always looking for high quality executives to add to the group, whether that be in investments or operations. In terms of adding to distribution, well, yes, we're actively looking for BDM or BDMs to assist us in particularly focusing on the listed investment companies. The discounts to the listed investment companies narrowed substantially after a series of roadshows. VG1 got down to about a 10% discount, and it's clear that as you engage more with advisors and investors, it has a positive impact on narrowing the discount. What we need to do is sustain that, and we are looking for and have had a variety of meetings with prospective candidates. We're actively in discussions with a number, and we'll inform you when we come to a conclusion. But we don't want to rush it and not make the right decisions. We want to make the right decisions here, and so it's taken longer than we'd hoped, unfortunately. But yes, we will be making a further investment in the BDM side, and we are actively looking for someone to help us join and manage, help manage the business so that I can spend all of my time on the portfolio and not have some of my time spent on the business itself. In terms of do you have additional plans for your distribution platform? Well, yes, when we listed, we certainly did. And over time, we would like to have capabilities in other areas and other asset classes. Last year, through a spanner in the works on a number of fronts, without going into detail. So we've had obviously a few substantial changes here, which will take us, we're recovering from, particularly on the investment side, we've definitely recovered from, but we need to make some changes here in terms of bringing in people to first help us, executives to come in first and help us with our listed investment companies, which is a priority for everybody. And do that's a balancing act between focusing on narrowing the discounts of listed investment companies and then obtaining high quality returns. I think long term investors are focused on the long term return, and as opposed to us focusing our investment team's time and resources on narrowing discounts in the very short term and then returns suffer. So what we've got to do is try and balance between compounding capital at an attractive rate and narrowing the discounts as a consequence. A couple of funds out there have had some very good performance and have got BDMs and the discounts have remained wide for them, and they're similar long short funds as us. The reality is we've got a lot of work to do, and we know that, and we're focused on it. So I hope that answers the question, but we're very focused on delivering compound returns. We're very focused on paying a growing and sustainable dividend for VG1 and initiating a dividend for VG8. But our priority is to compound capital and do so in a risk-adjusted fashion. That is why both of these strategies are absolute return funds. I would highlight both of these strategies generated positive returns in March of last year, when really very, very few funds or strategies didn't, because they are relative return, and that is the difference. We're an absolute return strategy, and over time that strategy has delivered returns in excess of the market, but and taking less risk than the market, and that has been our objective. So I hope hope that answers the question.
Great. Moving on to the next question. Last year was a tough year for you guys and lots of other hedge funds. How are things now?
Oh, well, it's a little bit open-ended, but Rob, you take the hard questions. Do you want to, you're in New York.
Yeah,
why don't
thanks.
You? You why don't you take that?
Yeah. You can hear me okay on this line?
Yep,
we can.
Yeah, great. Yeah, no, look, I mean, last year was you know, certainly tough, but I think, you know, through that period, we were pretty deliberate as a team. You know, we sat down and I think we sort of spoke about, you know, how can we, you know, turn this and take advantage of this period to, you know, improve our processes, you know, improve some of the things that we were doing. And, you know, coming out of that period, I think it's definitely improved. I'd say the investment team, you know, looking today across the board, I'd say is probably, you know, more engaged, more focused than I've seen in a very long time. So, you know, I think it's not surprising, as Rob mentioned earlier, that coming out of that period, we've had, you know, one of our most, I'd say, prolific periods in terms of new idea generation. So that, you know, that's been a positive, you know, certainly the last, you know, at least 6 months. From my own perspective, you know, I'm speaking with Rob daily, speaking with both Tom, Marco, and the other members of the investment team. And, you know, we're running through models, you know, we're debating both ideas in the portfolio, but prospective ideas, you know, pretty robustly on a daily basis. So, you know, communication's been excellent. You know, I think the team, you know, is working really well together, which is, you know, which is very exciting for us. And, you know, the other thing I think that, you know, we've been working on is we've got over here, you know, we've got a data scientist in New York who's been working really closely with the team, and, you know, that's the team here, but the team in Sydney and the team in Tokyo, and working on, you know, all our existing processes, you know, helping us streamline them, you know, questioning our processes, how we can improve them, working on the red flag processes for the short. So been really instrumental in sort of freeing up our time and streamlining processes so we can focus on the research side. So, you know, we've also added a couple of new hires, both junior, senior level. So that's also been, you know, something that's, I think, helped bring in, you know, some fresh set of eyes. So, you know, I think there's been some, you know, pretty exciting things, and I think the team in general, you know, is pretty excited. So hopefully that translates into returns over the next few years. But, you know, it's a pretty exciting period for us.
I couldn't have said it better myself, so, yeah. Thank you.
Got another question here on the webcast.
We've got a fair few, but I don't know how much time we're going to...
Do we do one more?
Yeah.
Okay, with recent tech industry adjustments, what's your view on the market, and would that affect your long-term views?
Well, it's sort of been one night or two nights. Well, I'm not sure it's an adjustment. There have been some price moves. A number of tech stocks went up, actually. So, you know, but it's a question on, partly a question on perhaps interest rates could be one point. You know, excessive or, you know, you. Euphoria in marketplaces and speculation due to factors that we have talked about now for a while. You know, the equity markets and other markets are trading at levels that in some cases are factoring very robust earnings growth. Still assume a relatively benign, you know, interest rate environment, given the fact that central banks are putting their foot on short end of the curves. But to get back to the question, with in terms of tech and tech industry, you know, we have a number of investments in technology companies or software companies, but we have a diversified investment portfolio, concentrated yet diversified. So one of the largest holdings in global would be Richemont. That owns Farfetch. Has a JV with Farfetch and Alibaba, and it also owns Mr. Porter and the Yuxneta Porter website. But it's not a technology company. We also have other situations in both global and the Asian fund, which are far more robust and resilient. But in terms of tech and valuations, it's something that we're very mindful of. There are a number of stocks that we'd love to have holdings in, or larger holdings in, but we haven't chased. One of the situations that we took a small stake in the IPO was Airbnb. It's a fantastic business. Having said that, the valuation at the moment is something that we grapple with. We've disclosed or highlighted that the fund has generated some good returns from owning Palantir, which is a US listed company, direct listed on the New York Stock Exchange, direct listed in the US last year, and that's been a very substantial return for us. We've been able to take advantage of substantial volatility in the marketplace in order to extract returns out of that investment. So I don't know, I'd perhaps hand it over to Rob Pointer to think about and you, Tom, to think about. But in terms of tech, I think we've been pretty focused on what we own, the quality of what we own. Pinterest has been a great performer for us, and that's been substantiated by extraordinary revenue growth and margin expansion. Snap is been a substantial returner for us. As I mentioned, Palantir. Some things we have cut back substantially, but a number of things that we think they're long-term winners, we're not going to cut them. And yes, there might be some volatility, but we think they're long-term multi-year compounders, just like Amazon has been for us over, I think, the last 7 years now, 8 years even. So, Tom, I don't know, do you want to touch on that? Because it's a broader question.
I mean, all I would say on this is just that we are stock pickers and we have a view on the stocks that we hold, and we have a firm view on the value of those stocks and the valuations long-term. In terms of the broader market, sure, there are pockets of stretch valuations, we say, but I think we obviously like what we own. We think the valuations are still attractive, and in situations where those valuations surpass what we think they can do over the next few years and the return has been pulled forward, we will sell those positions down and reduce our weights appropriately.
Rob, do you want to touch on that?
Yeah, no, look, the only thing I'd add to that is, you use the example of Airbnb, but, there's a number of names and companies that we believe are disrupting markets, which are on our watch lists, and some of them, similar to Airbnb, we even have, smaller positions in. But, as Tom said, we're stock pickers. These names that we go through, and Rob and I, went through one of them this morning, we've typically got buy prices or, developing and building up our buy prices. So, we, in the past, in markets where, where there's been pullback or there's been volatility, we've used that to our advantage to sort of build and size some of these positions, which we have tended to, hold long term. And then Pinterest obviously being a really good recent example of that.
All right. I think that's all we have time for today. We didn't get to all of the questions, but as I said earlier, our investor relations team will follow up with you if you put your details into the webcast. And as always, feel free to reach out to our investor relations team if you have any follow-ups or any questions about VGI, VG1, or VG8. Thank you all for dialing in today and your ongoing interest in VGI.